Well, it's Olympic season again, isn't it? I don't know about you, but it feels like that 4 years comes around more quickly every Olympics I live through. I love the Olympics. I really enjoy them. I do like watching the events, but my favorite parts, honestly, are those stories that we get to hear, the stories behind the event, behind the athlete, the stories of the lives of the athletes and of the journey that has led them to that, their Olympic moment. I love those stories. It can just be so inspiring to watch a person who has dedicated their lives to something get to finally live out their dream. You just know in that moment that's what's going on for them. I'll never forget my earliest experience of that. It was 1976. Those of you who were alive in 1976 will remember that the Olympics were in Montreal that year. And so, as Canadians, we were particularly fascinated with all that was going on. I was 10 years old. Yes, you can do the math. I'm going to be 50 this year. Save you the trouble. I was 10 years old, and I was, I thought, an aspiring young gymnast. There's something probably most of you don't know about me. You may remember, if you know anything about the world of gymnastics, that 1976 was the year of Nadia Comăneci, the 14-year-old Romanian girl who took that Olympic Games and the world by storm. She won 3 Olympic gold medals at 14 years old that year. She was also scored the first ever perfect 10 awarded in Olympic gymnastics. It was huge, and I watched everything she did, and I wanted to be just like her. So because of her inspiring example, when I returned to the gym that fall, I had this renewed determination to work even harder than I ever had before. Even at 10 years old, watching her example gave me this new vision of what was possible and a new commitment to work harder to try to achieve that. I think probably most of you could recount a similar experience. You've probably had someone in your life that inspired you towards a dream you have. In many ways, you know, that is exactly the reason that the writer of this letter to the Hebrews included this section that we just heard Kathy share with us so beautifully. As I mentioned last week, this part is called, in chapter 11, we call the Great Hall of Faith. And it functions much the same way as those grand halls that you would see if you've ever toured a castle or an aristocratic family home in England or Europe. You know, the places where they have all the portraits hanging on the walls, those pictures of people who have lived throughout that family and lived their own part in the family story in the generations past. And now they kind of hang on those walls somewhat intimidatingly, often, and looking down at the generations who are following. That's sort of what this section of text is. And the way Kathy chose to share it with us, with those references, really helps us to get that image. The author is reminding us of this great cloud of witnesses that we have, those people of faith who have lived throughout God's story since the beginning. And so the writer draws our minds back to their stories to inspire us to live faithfully into God's purposes for our lives. In their examples, we can find encouragement and even guidance. They show us what a life of faith looks like. They give us an example that we can emulate. So for us, there are a few things to learn from their example. Perhaps the first thing that we notice is this intense sense of activity in the passage. Without exception, we are confronted with people who are notable not just for what they thought, but for how they lived. The Israelites who walked through the Red Sea as on dry land as they escaped from Pharaoh's armies. The people who walked around the city walls of Jericho for 7 days because Joshua said God had told them to, and then got to see those walls crumble. And Rahab, a courageous woman who risked herself by hiding those Israelite spies in her home so that they could escape to safety. You can almost feel the writer's angst as he says that he just doesn't have time or space to describe all of the great things that people of faith have done. Beyond those opening examples, we're told that God's people have conquered, administered, escaped, become powerful, routed armies, been raised, tortured, flogged, imprisoned, persecuted, and even put to death. Those are the words that the writer uses to describe their example to us. And if you listened carefully, whether you were aware of it or not, you will have realized that they are all action words. They're describing not just what these people thought about God, but how that belief grew into a trust in God that itself impacted the way that they lived. As we talked about last week, you don't get to be part of the great hall of faith by just professing your faith. You get to be part of the great hall of faith by truly letting your faith help you grow in a trust in God the way those people did, and then letting that trust be the guiding force in your life. Now, you probably noticed that in those amazing list of stories, they weren't all examples of great stories of victory. There were some, for sure. Escaping Pharaoh's armies and watching the walls of Jericho crumble would have been unbelievable, phenomenal. Many of those actions in that long list did describe how God's people overcame all that was against them. And if we're going to be honest, as we think about being inspired by the people of faith who have gone before us, I think those are the kinds of stories that most of us turn to. My go-to for inspiration is the story of young David slaying a giant Goliath. You probably got your own favorite, a story that you turn to that reminds you that no matter how small or incapable you are feeling, the one who stands beside you is bigger and stronger, and will see you through. They're the stories that help you to believe that everything might be okay one day. And we all need those stories. They can be a source of courage and strength for us when we need it most. But I think that we are wise to follow the writer of Hebrews' lead on this one. He has included those great stories of victory, but he's also included many reminders of those who didn't apparently overcome the obstacles that they faced. Not all of those action words I listed, not all of the stories Kathy shared with us, described happy endings, did they? Many also described hardship and troubles that God's people have faced, things like flogging, mistreatment, persecution, even death. The author's not sugarcoating anything. While there are times when we have the sense of good overcoming evil, there are also times when that victory seems far less certain. There are times when the struggle just goes on, and even sometimes feels like it's intensifying, when the end doesn't seem to be in sight. And you know, as much as I love those triumphal David and Goliath stories, I really wonder if maybe these stories of those people who endured in the face of suffering, if they might actually provide us with a deeper kind of inspiration and courage. If you were here last week, you will remember that we talked about this letter being written to people who had been of the Jewish faith and had converted to Christianity and were now trying to live out their newfound faith in Christ. We think that they were probably living in Rome, where they were suffering intense persecution under a brutal emperor, Nero. They were waiting for Jesus' promised return and the victory he would bring, but they'd been waiting for 30 years, and there was no sign of his coming. These people were trying hard to be faithful, to trust in Jesus, who had captured their hearts and minds. But we can tell from this letter that they were obviously struggling to endure. Their faith was lagging, and all of that pressure they were facing was taking its toll. Some were losing heart, and we know even from how the writer writes that some people were in danger of actually giving up on Jesus altogether. And the writer seems to know them and seems to know their situation well. So in his wisdom, he writes to encourage the Hebrews not to give up, but instead to persevere, as others have done, who have faced seemingly unending struggles themselves. The Hebrews are encouraged to find the inspiration from these people, from their example. The writer realizes that when the times are toughest, sometimes the stories of victory can just seem too far out of reach. They almost backfire on you because they just remind you that your victory has not come yet. So the writer's really careful to remind us that yes, God's story has been advanced, both by some people who have apparently overcome whatever they faced, and through others. Others who spent their lives striving, but never got to see that victory come. For people who are facing what can feel like unending adversity, those examples of real people who persevered themselves are perhaps the most powerful. And so they are lifted high as the others, maybe even a little bit higher. It truly is wonderful when things work out, isn't it? When your prayers get answered and it feels like God's Spirit has just moved the obstacle that's in front of you aside and the way is clear for you to carry on. That's awesome. And we celebrate those times for sure. Don't get me wrong. But we all realize that life's not always like that, is it? Most of us have faced something at some point in our lives that probably felt insurmountable. Some of us actually seem to face more than our fair share, and I honestly don't know why that is. But I do know. I do know that there is a strange and important dynamic at play when we are facing our own suffering and struggles. And it's a dynamic that can bring a growth and a depth and a richness to our faith that strangely only seems to come through the struggle. You may remember in his letter to the Romans, Paul, a man who was well familiar with suffering himself, he wrote about this dynamic. He said, we also glory in our sufferings. Glory in our sufferings. Because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character. And character, hope. And hope does not put us to shame. Paul had figured out within his own life and experiences that suffering gives us the opportunity to dig down deep and persevere. And that our choice to persevere and not give up, that forges a depth of character in us that enables us to live more like Jesus did. And as our character is shaped more like Christ's, we become convinced that our hope is not in our immediate circumstances, whether they're great or not so great. That our hope is actually in the future God has promised to us all. The fulfillment of God's mission in this world. That great day when God is going to put all that is wrong in the world right. And we delight in the promise of that day. So our ability to live from a character that is permeated by and radiates hope in that, that's shaped in our daily choice to persevere in the midst of whatever struggles we face. And so, even in our trials, we can rejoice for the work that God is doing in and through us, just like Paul did, and just like Jesus did. we can have that same perspective as we begin to see our struggles as opportunities to persevere, to practice persevering even. And we know that that perseverance shapes us more and more into people who live and love like Jesus did. This is a very important dynamic in the Christian life, and I know it's not an easy one to hear about. It's not one we talk about very often. There's much lighter things I could have chosen to preach on this summer Sunday, but it's really, really important. It is no accident that often the most inspiring stories of faith are stories of those people who faced incredibly difficult challenges. Metal is forged and purified in fire, and so are our characters. So maybe it's not all bad that we have to face some adversity in this life. Difficult, for sure. I'm not minimizing it, but not all bad. So whatever your particular challenge looks like, the good news is that the antidote is the same. Persevere. Stick with it. Do whatever you need to do to keep going. As the writer to Hebrews urged, look to the people who have gone before us. In their lives and their examples, we can find an incredible source of inspiration and wisdom and direction. And ultimately, as the writer urged in our final verse of the reading Kathy shared with us, look to Jesus. In the Message, verse 2 reads like this, and I just love it. Keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race we're in. Study how he did it, because he never lost sight of where he was headed, that exhilarating finish in and with God. That verse reminded me of another inspiring and beautiful story that I think powerfully illustrates what we are being invited by God to take from this reading today. It's another Olympic story, one that you may remember from the 1992 Barcelona Games. It was the quarterfinals of the 400-meter sprint for men, and British athlete Derek Redmond was one of the favorites to win the gold. A lifetime of training had brought him to that, his Olympic moment. So the starter's gun fired, and the runners all burst out of the starting blocks. Halfway through the race, Derek is in the lead. But then disaster struck. His hamstring went, and he collapsed on the track. The agony in his tear-streaked face showed vividly the pain, physical and emotional, that he was in. It was just a crushing blow for him. First aid attendants ran out onto the field to try to help him, but he pushed them away, and then he painfully got to his feet and started to stumble down the track. It was obvious to everyone who was watching. Derek had come to race, and he was going to finish his race. The crowd was mesmerized. The race officials didn't know what to do. Suddenly, you see in the video an older man running onto the track. He brushes off the officials who try to stop him, and he runs right up to Derek, puts his arms around him, and suddenly everybody realizes, without being told, this is Derek's father, Jim. You see him say to him, you don't have to do this, son. And you see Derek look at his dad and say, yes, I do. And so Derek's father puts his arm around his son, supports his weight, and says to his son, then we will finish this race together, son. And arm in arm, agony on Derek's face, tears streaming down his father's face, Derek and his dad continued down the track. Derek buries his face in his father's shoulder. The pain is too much. But his father's strong body carried his son physically and emotionally every step of the way. They keep waving away the officials who are trying to stop them. And finally, after what has seemed like miles, accompanied by a now roaring crowd who are on their feet, Derek crossed the finish line. And that image, more than any of the spectacular medal performances of the whole rest of the games, that image of he and his father making it across the finish, that became the defining image for the Barcelona Olympics. I think that there's a bunch in this story for us, but there's two things I just want to finish with. The first is that Derek hadn't crossed the finish line the way he expected to when he started that race. It was different than he thought, than he dreamed. But he still finished it. He crossed the line. Faced with unimaginable pain and suffering, he made the choice to finish the race. And that's the point. That is the point for all of us, friends. Make the choice to finish the race. Whatever you have to endure, persevere. The second, I think even more important lesson than that, is that when you are lagging, when you're hurt, you're in pain, and you're tempted not to go on, look around you. There's someone there. Someone who has promised to support you, to bear the weight, so that you can carry on. Friends, you're not running this race alone. Jesus, the one who has already run it and finished it, is running it with you. And he's going to run it with you every step of the way. So when you face those challenges, stop, look around, pray, listen. Jesus is right there beside you. I can assure you of that. And he's ready to carry you if he needs to, through every struggle you face until your race is done. Amen. Amen.